דרכיכו השיים אוי די יהוויני אוי חוי זייכו אוי חוי זייכו למד הוויני דרכיכו השיים דרכיכו השיים אוי די יעני אוי אוי חוי סייכו אוי אוי חוי סייכו להם דבר עיני דרוכיכו השמיים דרוכיכו השמיים אוי די
class is dedicated in loving memory of it's in the schus of the anniversary of Rabbi and Mrs. Hecht, Rabbi Yaakov Yehuda Hecht, Olav HaSholem, and his wife Shatichya. Anybody who wants to sponsor any of the shiurim, please notify us here at Man Yisrael, myself, or anybody. This week's Parshas Yisrael, is the great Parsha of the giving of the Torah, the Parsha of Matan Torah. The opening verse of the Parsha, Vayidaber Elokim, the introduction to the giving of the Torah, opens up with the following pasuk. Vayidaber Elokim es kol advarim ha'ela le'emor. And Hashem spoke all these words, le'emor, saying. Now this is a very common verse in the Torah. We find many times the Torah says, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe le'emor, that Hashem said to Moshe, saying. The word le'emor usually means to give over. Hashem said to Moshe, he said, I'm telling you this, but now you are to give this over to them. Repeat this to the Jewish people. And that's how Rashi explains Lamor in many places, in Vayikra, in Bamidbar somewhere, and in this week in the Parsha too, there is an indication to that. And in the Gemara, Masechta Saita, in the fifth parak, in the second Mishnah, Rashi clearly, in a very clear words, explains that that's what Lamor means always. That I am saying this to you, and now you should give it over to them. Over here, however, that's problematic. Because over here we can't say that the meaning of the word lamar is to give over to someone else, because all of the Jewish people were there. Hashem was speaking directly to all of Israel, to all the Yidden. They were all gathered at the foot of the mountain, and Hashem spoke to them all. So who should they give it over? Everybody heard the Asaras Adibras. You can't even say that this was meant for the later generations, for future generations, that they should give over to their children. Because as we know, as it is stated in Pirkei de Rebbe Eliezer, it's stated in the Medrash Rabbah, in Shmois Rabbah, in the Zohar, there are many sources for this, that all the future generations were there, all the souls of the Jewish people. Everybody was there at the giving of the Torah. So if that's the case, whoever needed to hear it, heard it directly from Hashem. It doesn't have to be given over to anybody else. And because of this, the Mechilta says, like a medrash on Shemois, the Mechilta, and that the word lamar has a different meaning over here. Lamar over here means to respond. Hashem spoke to the Jewish people, and he wanted them to respond. He commanded them, and he said, answer me. Do you accept the commandment? I'm asking you so and so. Do you accept that? And they didn't accept it. Lamar for them to say something. And they all answered back. Now the manner in which they answered back, what they said in response to Hashem, is a matter of dispute amongst the sages. Rabbi Yishmael says that when the Jews repeated and they answered Hashem's commandment, they said, Al hein hein va'alav lav. On the yeah, they said yeah, and on the no, they said no. Meaning that there's two types of commandments. There are positive commandments, and then there is prohibitive commandments. Mitzvah saseh and mitzvah lo saseh, things we ought to do, and things we ought not to do. So, for example, when Hashem said, remember the day of Shabbos, so they said, yeah, we will remember the day of Shabbos. Hey, yeah. Honor your parents, they said, yeah, we will honor our parents. Don't steal. Don't swear falsely. So they said, no, we will not do that. Love, no, we will obey, and we will not do that which we shouldn't do. That was the response. Rabbi Akiva says, no. That the Jewish people answered, Al hein, hein. On the yeah, they said, yeah. Valav, and on the no's, they also said, hein, yeah. Valav, hein. To everything they said, yeah. What does it mean they said to everything, yeah? They said, yes, we will listen. Hashem, whatever you tell us, we are here to listen to you. We accept your commandments, and we will do as you say. If what you're telling us is to do something, yes, we will listen. If you're telling us not to do something, yes, we will listen, and we won't do it. But their answer was yes to everything. Yes and yes. That's the way Rabbi Akiva says. This was their response. Now obviously we understand that the giving of the Torah was the greatest event in all of history. So every little detail and every little nuance and every little thing has a major significance. So really, what is the difference between the response? It means the same thing. Whether they're saying yes and no, or they said to everything yes, they're saying we accept Hashem, we're accepting your mitzvah to do what as you're telling us to do. It seems to be the same thing. What is the difference between the commandment being said so, between the answer, the response being said so, or being said so? That this is disputed amongst the sages. By Matan Torah we find another argument, another dispute amongst these very same sages, Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva. At the conclusion, after the Ten Commandments, at the end of the Aseres Adibros, the Pasuk says, at the Yidden, that the Jews were there, the narration goes on, that finishes after Hashem's completed speaking, the narration goes on to the Jewish people that were standing at the foot of the mountain, perceiving the giving of the Torah. So it says over there that, V'chol ha'om ro'em es ha'kolos, all the people saw the sounds, the salapidim and the flames, the sahar ashan and the flaming, and the smoking mountain, Vayara'om vayanu, and the people saw and they moved back. Whereas Rashi said they were sweating. Vayamdu marochok, and they stood at a distance. So right away, if you look at the verse carefully, something doesn't fit. It says, Vayara om, v'chola om roim esakolos. All the people saw the sounds. We don't see sounds. We hear sounds. So it should have said, v'cholam shomim esakolos. They heard the sounds. So Rabbi Yishmael says, true. When it says they all saw the sounds, it means that they they saw what is to be seen, and they heard what is to be heard, what is audible. That's what they heard. So when you're reading the verse, we have to rearrange the words. V'chala am roim, and the people saw, is not referring to the sounds. They didn't see the sounds. They heard the sounds. When it says they saw, it's referring to the later words in the pasuk. They saw the flames. They saw the smoking mountain. So we have to just switch and eliminate or take that word out as if it wasn't there and say, V'chola om royim, they saw the lapidim, the flames, and the har ashen. That's Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akita says, no. V'chola om royim es akoylois, that's what they saw. That's what the verse says. He says, royim es anishma v'shoymen es anire. The people saw what is ordinarily heard. B'shomen es anira, they heard what is ordinarily seen. Rabbi Akiva says they sighted the sounds. They heard the sights. So there was a switch in their manner of perception. Usually we see what is to be seen and hear what is to be heard. They heard what is usually seen and so, obviously many questions arise. First of all, Rabbi Akiva, what is the purpose of this miracle? What was the purpose of this extraordinary miracle, of this abnormality? That the people that are standing and perceiving, obviously, it was important for them to take in, to absorb what was going on. And to absorb it fully, all the details, to see, to hear, to experience this with all their senses. That was important. That was so important that Hashem made a miracle, that all the blind people were healed, all the deaf people were healed, so that everybody should be able to be fully impacted by the giving of the Torah. Fine, so that we understand. But why is it? And what's the gain? What's the profit? Why would it be necessary for them to see the sounds and hear the sights? For what purpose? And as we mentioned last week, Hashem doesn't just do miracles frivolously for no reason, just to make shtick. That's not what it is. So why? So you have to say that if this, Rabbi Akiva says, this is the miracle that took place by the giving of the Torah, we have to say, as again mentioned last week, this miracle is an integral part of the giving of the Torah. It's a natural consequence of the giving of the Torah. It's part of it. When the Torah was given, the Jewish people were elevated to such a high spiritual level. They ascended to such spiritual peaks, to such a transcendental state, that in that state, you see the sounds and you hear the sights. It wasn't something added. It was just part of what Matan Torah was all about. But then we need to understand, why is that? What does spirituality have to do with this? Why, when they've achieved and attained such a high level, is there this abnormal perception of what's going on? Now, on the other hand, on Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael, who says, no, the people saw what is to be seen and heard what is to be heard. Okay, so that's natural. It isn't miraculous. So why is the Torah telling us this? Why is the Torah speaking about that the people saw and they heard? They were there. So we understand. If the people were standing at the foot of the mountain, and there was the thunder and the lightning and the noise and all this going on, so they perceived it. So they saw it and they heard it. So obviously. So why is the Torah telling us? V'chala amro, and they saw. Yeah, they were there. They saw. If anything, it wanted to say how it affected them, like at the end of the pasuk. It says that vayara om vayanu, they were sweating, they were trembling, they stood at far. So the verse could have said there's that. Vachala om na'u, all the people were shaking and trembling. Vayamdu marachot, they stood far. So according to Rabbi Akiva, that the verse is telling us there's a miracle going on. No, the miracle, that's the needs to be told. Something different. But if it was ordinary, so why is the verse have to tell him, to tell us this? So obviously you have to say no. Rabbi Yishmael is telling us the greatness of Matan Torah. The greatness. The height or the what the Jewish people attained by the giving of the Torah was they reached a level that they were able to see the sounds and hear, see the sights and hear the sounds. But why is that a great level? That's natural. That's the way we always live. We see what is seen and we hear what is hearing. Another interesting thing is that whenever we find a subject and the sages are arguing about the subject and they're arguing about various details, more than one argument about the same subject, it's likely, and it makes sense to say, that these are not two completely independent arguments, separate arguments, but rather there's one point. There's one essential fundamental difference between both of them, or the way they see it. And then the rest are details, and that's why it expresses itself in the various different things. So we have to say in this argument of Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva, they're arguing about two things. The way the Jewish people perceived the giving of the Torah and the way they responded to it, which are two things that are very closely related, because as a result of your perception, that's how you respond. So you have to say that this is really one argument. And these are two details or expressions of the same point. And that Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva are fundamentally different in their whole approach to the giving of the Torah, to the significance of the giving of the Torah, to the meaning of it, to the whole experience of it, is experienced differently from Rabbi Shmuel's perspective, from Rabbi Akiva's perspective. So we need to understand what is the connection. Why is it that when you see the sounds and hear the sights, then your response is to everything yes? Yes, Hashem. To the positive, to the prohibitive, to the negative, to everything you say, yes, Hashem, I will listen. If your perception is a normal perception, you see what is to be seen and you hear what is to be heard, then your response is to the positive you respond yes, and to the negative you respond no. How are they related? What's the connection? So to understand this, we need to first understand what is the difference between sight and hearing, between seeing and hearing. These are both seeing, vision, and hearing. These are both two senses that we have that make us aware of our outside environment. We process the environment, the outside environment, into our consciousness to become aware of what is around us, what is outside beyond our own existence through our senses. Primarily through seeing and hearing. However, there is a major difference between the two things. First of all, in the perceiver, in the person who is perceiving the sight, he's perceiving the sounds. In the manner in which the sights and the sounds, that reality which in which what we're seeing and what we're hearing becomes impressed upon us. When you see something, that which you see gets embedded deep, deep, deep in your psyche. It etches itself in a very deep place in you. It's inseparable. First of all, you can't disassociate yourself from something you've seen. Or at least it's very, very, very hard. Secondly, it's etched in your memory. It's there for a very long time. Sometimes things we've seen years later, they come back and they're as vivid as the time we've seen it. Because when you see something, it gets imprinted deep. Also, it can't be challenged. When you saw something with your own eyes and then others want to cast doubt and challenge and question and say, how do you say you saw this and this person do so and so, or this and this happen? It's impossible. It doesn't work. It can't be. And give all kinds of logical things that refute it. You say, what are you talking about? I've seen it with my own eyes. You're telling me? When you see something, it's like people say, seeing is believing. Because seeing you become completely one with the thing you see. When you hear something, yes, information has been transmitted. Something was introduced into your consciousness. But it's a far more external relationship. That which now isn't pressed upon your awareness and your soul is on a far more external level. You're able to disassociate yourself from what you heard. You're able to forget it. You heard and then you forgot it. And then you're also, it can be challenged. Sometimes even you hear something from a very reliable source, someone you believe would never lie to you, and they told you, eyewitness account, they saw so and so, but you didn't see it, you're only hearing about it. And then there are various different things that come up which make you doubt, which present challenges to that which you've heard. So you can doubt it. Even if it was a very reliable source, you're able to disassociate yourself and it becomes weaker. And as I said before, sometimes it just fades away completely. And that is because originally when you heard it, it impressed itself upon you, but in a far more external way. It's almost like it was written, it wasn't scraped into you. But when you see something, it gets etched, engraved. That's the first difference. The difference between seeing and hearing in the perceiver. But then there's another difference. And that is in that which is being perceived. In the substance of what one can draw in or connect to through the hearing and seeing. Seeing, you can only see the physical. Physical substances. Things that are tangible. Things that have a touchable concreteness. Something like that you can see. Spiritual things we can't see. Or even metaphysical or ethereal things. Things that are just not of more of a refined nature, even if they're physical. Of a more refined nature, more of an elegant substance. Like breath, ear, voices, sound. Sound is a physical thing. It's sound waves. But the eye can't behold it, can't take it. Why? It's not tangible enough. It's not concrete. It's more abstract. And the eye can't see it. Hearing relates to the more abstract. You hear things that are more distant. Sounds of a more spiritual nature, that's what you hear. Now these two things are connected and interrelated one with each other. These two differences between seeing and hearing. The reason we see the physical and hear the spiritual is because we are physical beings. We function within the physical world and we are physical beings. Therefore, earth and physicality is very close to us. That's why when we're bonding, when we're connecting, see, when you're seeing something or hearing something, you're connecting to it. You're reaching out, becoming affiliated and connected to something. So, through seeing, you're attaching yourself, connecting and bonding to something in a manner, in a very, very intimate way. You become fully connected to that. You're merging with it. For that reason, we can only establish such a connection with things that are close to us. Things that are closer to our realm. Being that we're physical, so physical things, we can establish such a deep connection with them. See them. Bond with them. Completely. Absolutely. Things that are of a more spiritual nature, distant, we can't enjoy such a close connection to them. So how then do we relate to the more spiritual? So Hashem has given us another sense, the sense of sound and hearing, that we're able to relate and connect to something even at that is more distant and farther away. We can have a more distant connection. These are things, some things we can connect to in a very close way. Other things that are further away from us, so we can touch them or reach out to them, but we can reach out to them and connect to them with a distant connection. And that's our power of hearing. And that is the reason why the seeing only is in the physical, and the hearing is, you can't hear something physical, you can only hear a spiritual, because the hearing is something that is, it has its function. It's meant to make us become aware and connect to things that we can't have such a close connection and such a close bond with. And now we'll understand what Rabbi Akiva was saying happened by the giving of the Torah. Being that we are physical people, there is that which we naturally see. What do we naturally see? We naturally see ourselves, the world, the physical environment that we're in. That's what we see. What does that mean? It means that 90% of our consciousness is pervaded by physical consciousness. We are very, very, very in touch and very, very conscious of our own bodies, of the physical environment around us, of physical human beings around us. We are very, very conscious of our physical needs, desires, wants. The physical is very, very real to us. The spiritual, the godly, the abstract, somewhere in the tip of our consciousness, we have this little antenna, spiritual antenna, because we have a soul, which makes us aware also of spiritual phenomena. So we have some sense of the beyond. We know, we recognize, and we have a feeling that there is a soul. There is such a concept of angels, malachim, and Hashem, spiritual energy, spiritual vitality. All this is sensed, but it's somewhere way up there, occupying only a tiny little sliver of our consciousness. Somewhere way, way at the tippy top. We sense, we feel. And of course it varies, various different people. Some people are very physical. To them the physical world is the only reality. And there's only a tiny, tiny, slight tinge of some spiritual awareness. And even that sometimes can be distorted or covered up. And others are naturally born with a greater knack for spirituality. And the spirit is sensed to them. But everybody, all human beings, as long as they inhabit the physical earth, the physical is truer and more of a reality than the spirituals, than the spirit. It's true that through our voda, through our service, through our work, we have to work on ourselves to increase our spiritual sensitivities and to make that more of our consciousness. But still the physical occupies more space because our inherent physical presence and our occupation of a physical body that dominates. So, and therefore, when your stomach is growling and your stomach is saying, I need lunch, I'm hungry, I want lunch now, and your soul is thirsting for mincha, it's the time for the afternoon prayer, it's time to daven mincha, the awareness, the urgency of the physical, of the desire for lunch is far more intense than the need or the feeling or the sense that I need to daven mincha. It doesn't mean that we have to follow our physical demand and our physical urge, but the natural sense and the natural feeling of what I feel from the physical is more intense than the spiritual. That's the natural condition of human beings. That's the way Hashem created us. Rabbi Akiva says there's one exception. At the moment of Matan Torah, everything turned around. At the moment of Matan Torah, when Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai, when Hashem came down on Har Sinai, when God tore open the heavens and Hashem revealed Himself, without any constraints, without any limitations. Spoke to each and every one, panim b'panim, dibur Hashem imachem, face to face, Hashem spoke to everyone. He said, "Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am God, your God. I am your Hashem. I created you. I made you." At that moment, the spiritual was so intense, so real. The godly was so pronounced. It was radiating with such intensity, with such force. The godly was so real, so absolute, so concrete. Physical was just a faint echo, a distant dream. It faded away as if it didn't exist. Almost didn't exist. So Rabbi Akiva says, Royin, they saw Asanishma. That which we usually hear, that which we only can hear about, but if we always maintain a distance with the spiritual and the godly, which is always just a far off thing, by the giving of the Torah, that is something they saw. That is something that was so concrete and real by them. The physical world disintegrated, almost lost its existence completely. That which we usually see, that which is concrete reality to us, was something that they heard. They heard. They knew somewhere, there must be a world. Somewhere there must be a body. Somewhere, why? Because Hashem is talking about a donkey. Hashem is saying that you have to have your donkey rest on Shabbos. And Hashem is speaking about honor your father and your mother. So there has to be a father and there has to be a mother. That means I must have a physical existence somewhere, somewhat. If Hashem is telling me don't kill or don't steal, don't rob, don't whatever. So it must be that there are these things. That there must be a body that would like to perhaps help themselves to someone else's property or whatever. So these were things that were, it had to be that there is a world out there. Because the Torah said so. So is the opposite of what we usually feel. Usually the world is real and absolute. And we know that there is Hashem, and we know that there are angels, and we know there is a neshama because the Torah says. And we learn the Torah, and we have a neshama, so we believe what it says in the Torah. So we know that someone there is. So the book says so. That's how we know the way it is. But then there is the real world. That's the physical. By Matan Torah, the opposite happened. The spiritual, the godly, that was the real world. That was real. And the world is something that they had proof because they looked in the Pasuk and they looked in the Torah and they knew that there must be a body, because how can you put on tefillin if you don't have a hand? So you must have a hand. You have to have a kishke, you have to have a stomach, because otherwise you can't eat matzah. And teeth to be able to eat the matzah. So you have to be these things. That was it. But that's what they knew about, just through from external sources, because the Torah said so. And that's what Rabbi Akiva says, and that's what we understand. It's not another miracle, not an extra thing. This is the giving of the Torah. By the giving of the Torah, when Hashem revealed Himself with such a great revelation. Because in truth, why is it that we feel the physical world in the first place? In Tanya, it says an amazing thing. In Shara Yichud Vamun, in the second part of Tanya, he says, when God, you know, we're surrounded, we're living in a world filled with divinity, we're surrounded with a flow of godliness everywhere. As mentioned last week in the class, everything in this world is continuously created every second because Hashem is speaking it into existence. The words of Hashem are continuously, perpetually permeating every creation, flowing into every being, saying, exist, be, come into existence. And therefore he says that the divine presence is so present, it's so revealed, it's everywhere. Now, how is it possible to see the world? So the creations are very light shadows of the divine projections of Hashem's words. The creative life force, that's the real substance. That's real existence. The creations are just little shadows. And therefore he says, Ilu nitn rishus la'ayin lirois. If the eye would be given, permission would be granted for our eyes to see the spiritual, to see the godly. Lo hayo gashmiyus olam v'chumriyusoy nireh klal le'einenu. The gashmis, the physical, and the chumris, and the substance of our physical world would not be seen at all to our eyes. It would be impossible to see it. It would be cancelled out by the real true substance of everything, the godliness. So really, we shouldn't see the physical at all. How do we see it? How is it possible that we see it? It's because Bereishis Bara Elokim Es HaShamayim Es HaAretz. When Hashem created the world, He created it through the name of Elokim. The name of Elokim is the name of concealment, because Hashem veiled and obscured and hid and covered again and again with so many different coverings. He covered up and blocked the godly light, that it should not be vivid, it should not be seen, it should not be sensed within the creations. So it makes it possible for us to behold and see the physical world. And more than that, not to see Hashem at all. However, that was as long as Hashem was keeping it concealed. By Matan Torah, Hashem removed that all. And by Matan Torah, Hashem revealed Himself. He took away all those partitions. He took away all those blockages. So we saw reality as it really is. That Hashem is everything. Ein Oid Movadoi. There's none but Him. To the point that it canceled all of existence, almost everything, almost to the complete cancellation. It left the world a tiny little bit of existence, because again, without that, we couldn't fulfill the Torah. We need a world in order to be able to do the mitzvahs. So it's natural. It's natural that by Matan Torah, they would see the sights, see the sounds, and hear the sights. Reb comes over Yishmael, and Reb Yishmael says, Gevald! Rabbi Akiva, how can you say that? I understand you're tempted. I understand it makes so much sense that at that point to say that they were so taken, they were so drawn in by the incredible revelation of the giving of the Torah, they were swept up by the light. True. But if it's the way you're saying, then it defeats the whole purpose of why the Torah was given. It cannot be. Or else there's no reason for Hashem to give the Torah in the first place. Hashem didn't give the Torah to undo the creation. Hashem didn't give us the Torah that we should all ascend to heaven. Hashem purposely did not give the Torah to angels. He didn't give them to Malachim. Why didn't He give it to the angels? Because the angels inhabit a world where the spiritual is real, where the godly is absolute. And the world is a question. The world is possible. They live in that reality. They feel Hashem more than they feel themselves. And that's why they're in constant submission and in surrender to Hashem. That's the way Malachim feel. But Hashem didn't give the Torah there. Hashem gave the Torah down to earth, to physical human beings. Because the purpose of Matan Torah was Vayeded Hashem al Har Sinai. Hashem came down into our environment. He came down into our world. He wants to engage us in our turf. He wants us as human beings living and inhabiting a physical earth, who live in the perception of earthy consciousness, physical consciousness, a consciousness where you feel your body more than you feel your soul. You feel the material more than you feel the spirit and the godly. And in that world, you will live a godly life. You will live in submission and in surrender and in compliance with the Eibishter's will, with Hashem's desire. Hashem wants a human being who his tuna sandwich is more important to him than Shmona Esrei. That his pickle that he eats with his tuna sandwich is more real to him than Aleinu, that we say after Shmona Esrei. And nevertheless, that human being should put his tuna and his pickle to the side and go daven mincha, because it's mincha time. That's thrilling. That's enjoying. That's enjoyable to him. He wants a person who worked and toiled for months and perhaps years on a business deal, given it all his God and all his effort, and feels so proud of himself that he's seen it through and he made a big chunk of money. And when he's ready to take all that money and use it for whatever he wants, Hashem wants that human being to stop for a moment and listen to the tiny whisper of his soul telling him, it's not you who gave you success. It's Hashem who gave you success. It's Hashem's money. Therefore, you ought to take a nice piece of that money, a nice chunk of that money, and give it to tzedakah. That brings celebration. That brings delight. That causes simcha by Hashem above. Because He's not impressed by angels. They're predictable. They're boring. That's robotic. Of course they do. Because of what do you expect of them? They live in the world where the godly is the only things, of course. Anything godly goes. There's nothing else but Hashem. But we're inhabiting a different kind of a world, the world of darkness. And in that darkness, we find by us too, as the mashal is given in so many svarim, what's entertaining to us? We're entertained by things that are unusual. We go to SeaWorld and we see dolphins doing all kinds of cute stuff, jumping up and down and spinning and bouncing balls on their nose, and sea lions and whatever saying, or parrots saying, I want a cracker. Well, that's exciting. So someone can say, Meshuggah, why are you getting all excited? Because the parrot said, I want a cracker. I can say, I want a cracker in English, in Spanish, in French. You should be impressed with me. Clap, everybody clap. The fact that you can speak, you're human. Humans are meant to speak. But when a parrot talks, when a bird talks, it can articulate itself and say something, well, that's exciting. Hashem sees us as parrots. When we can do the godly thing, it makes him excited. He celebrates. So Rabbi Yishmael says, oh no, Rabbi Akiva, don't allow yourself to go to heaven. Don't allow the giving of the Torah to turn you into an angel. That's not what it was meant to be. And therefore, at the moment when the Torah was given, it wasn't only that that's the way we have to perform, that's the way we have to live our lives. We have to live our lives maintaining an earthy consciousness and nevertheless live in accordance to Hashem's life. More than that, by the giving of the Torah, because the giving of the Torah was the empowerment. It was the moment that we were receiving, we were accepting it. So we have to accept it as human beings, not as angels. We have to accept it as inhabitants of earth, not as inhabitants of heaven. So for that reason, at the giving of the Torah too, they needed to remain in the world where the spirit is distant and removed and the physical is concrete and real. So where is there a greater miracle? Rabbi Yishmael or Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Yishmael is a much greater miracle. How is that possible? How is it possible when God is fully manifest, fully revealed, removed all blockage, totally, and that we are still able to maintain our physicality and our consciousness? We are able to stand our ground. Why? Because we know this is what Hashem wants. We're able to insist that we are somebody with desires and wants and ambitions and agenda. And nevertheless, we will do what Hashem wants. That's the miracle of Matan Torah. Rabbi Akiva is natural, of course. Of course, when the heaven opens up and Hashem is revealed, we all soar up to heaven. And that's no big deal. The big deal is Rabbi Yishmael, that the finite and the earth was able to remain earthy and lowly and be able to speak to God. That's the greatness of the Torah. How is it possible? How is that really possible? It's possible because that's the miracle of the Torah. The miracle of the Torah is the Torah facilitates the marriage between God and the world. It's a marriage, it's a fusion. A marriage is not about two people coming together and one canceling the other. If you cancel the other partner, sometimes you have a couple where one is so charismatic or so dominant or so this that the other loses their existence. They don't exist anymore. They're just included in their partner. That's not a real marriage. I mean, it's a marriage, but not the way a marriage ought to be. The way a marriage is supposed to be is where both partners are present. They're there. And they create something special. Emergence of both of them. An infinite God and an infinitesimal creation. Merge and unite together. Each one respecting the boundaries or respecting the other's existence. Caring, being sensitive, aware of the other. Putting the other before themselves. Hashem, we care about him, and he can care about our silly little needs. That's the marriage. The Torah enables heaven and earth, Hashem, the infinite and the finite, to come together. And the finite does not get canceled. As we mentioned last week, the world of Mashiach is not that we go back into the sea and we become fish. We're swallowed up by godliness. The world of the Mashiach is a world where we remain on earth, but we live on earth. We live in the same condition as the fish live in the sea, with a submission to Hashem. But we remain physical, we remain who we are. That's the Mashiach, the world. That's the world that we have to create through the Torah and bring the world to that Mashiach state. And that's why Rabbi Yishmael says, this is the way the Torah was given. Now the difference between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva is not just one saw it this way and one saw it the other way. It comes from who they were. As people, what type of neshama they were. Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva, the personality of who they were, gave rise and expressed itself, or gave them this outlook, this fundamental difference, the outlook. See, Rabbi Yishmael was a Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Yishmael was a tzaddik. A tzaddik is a saintly person who is following the path that Hashem has charted, doing that which he is supposed to do all his life. Hasn't gone astray. Fulfilling the purpose of life. What is the purpose of life? The purpose of life is to elevate, to sublimate the physical world, to purify the physical world. The physical world that is physical should become more receptive and open to Hashem. So in Neshama, what is Hashem? In order to do that, to make this world into a home for Hashem, Hashem sends a Neshama down into the world. The soul lives for thousands of years. The soul is living in godly consciousness. The soul is living in a world where the Eibishter, where Hashem, where Elokus, where Hashem is real. And the creation is just possible that it exists somewhere. That's what the neshama lives with for thousands of years. Then Hashem takes the neshama and sends it down into a body. The purpose of the soul's journey and descent into the body is so that it can educate and introduce something spiritual and godly to the body. Yes, that earthy body that can't see beyond itself. The animal consciousness that lives its entire existence pursuing its own selfish interests, seeking physical gratification. That very body. And the neshama has to come in and introduce. Make the body yield and bend and perform according to Hashem's desire, Hashem's want. So from the perspective of a tzaddik, doing what Hashem wants, it is important that the body remain a body and the earth remain earth. And as the earth is earth and the body is a body, it will do what Hashem wants it to do. That's why Rabbi Shmuel says, the giving of the Torah meant remaining who we are and allowing Hashem to enter into our world, to influence us as we are human beings. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, is a whole different person. Rabbi Akiva is descendant from Gerim. He comes from converts. He has a different past. Rabbi Akiva himself only began his spiritual journey, only began living a higher life at the age of 40. Till the age of 40, he knew nothing. So when you have a soul that comes down into this world and gets pulled down, a soul gets torn away, a soul that gets overwhelmed by the physical body and by the darkness of this world, and the neshama that gets carried away sometimes for a day, for a week, for months, for years, for decades, sometimes even for generations. A soul that is inhabiting darkness. That soul is in deep pain. That soul is aching. That soul is crying. Because it's being taken, brutally taken away from its godly state. And it's enslaved to the physical. It's enslaved to the mundane. It's living a life. It's living in lies. It's living in deception. The soul is in a very, 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 very painful state. When finally there is a moment of a glimmer of light, when finally there is something that rocks this person's life, something that causes a crack, and they wake up and they realize the emptiness, the stupidity of their life, how nothing, how it means nothing. And they awaken up and they become aware of Hashem. They become aware of Torah. They become aware of purpose. When the neshama finally has an opportunity to open up and to break out, and to the neshama yearns and it breaks and it bursts open and it tries to free itself completely from the physical shackles of the darkness of the physical world. And all the neshama wants is for it to go back to the pristine light, to the consciousness, to the holiness, to the truth that it had for all that time prior to its fall. That's the notion of a Baal Tshuva. The Baal Tshuva has been living in darkness. They're aching, they're crying. Finally, when the door opens up, they're surging, they're flying. They're running towards God with all their might. As the Zohar says, the beauty of the Baal Tshuva over the Tzaddik is that the neshama, the Baal Tshuva pursues Hashem b'cheil yatir, with intense urgency, with intense strength, far greater than the Tzaddik could, because he has to make up for all that lost, for all the darkness. The Tzaddik never disconnected, the Baal Tshuva disconnected. It is for that reason Rabbi Akiva, of course he was a Tzaddik, but his mode of service was a Baal Tshuva service. Rabbi Akiva is coming from darkness. He's not coming from light. He's not coming over here to transmit the godly message. He's escaping. He's running away from the darkness that he has been subject to. He's running back to the embrace of Hashem. Running back to be cradled in God's light. So a person like that shuns the world. A person like that doesn't want earthly perception. All it wants is light. So Rabbi Akiva sees, and Rabbi Akiva is studying, that there was Matan Torah. How does Rabbi Akiva see, if there was Matan Torah and God came down to speak to the Jewish people, it was an opportunity. It was an opportunity for transcendence. Of course they transcended. Of course they all went to heaven. Of course they just were absorbed in truth. What, are they going to maintain a lie? Are they going to live in stupidity? Are they going to live in that darkness? Of course they didn't. So that's why Rabbi Akiva sees Matan Torah as an opportunity, as a time when they embraced the godly and they abandoned the physical. That's the Baal Tshuva, the energy of the Baal Tshuva. It is for that reason. Now we'll understand. And then we see Rabbi Akiva. What did Rabbi Akiva say? In the end of his life, sadly, they were tortured into death, the Romans. And they were skinning him alive. And the students were standing, and the students, and Rabbi Akiva was saying the Shema while they were doing this. And they said to him, they couldn't believe it, they said, Ad kan, till here? Your commitment, your devotion to us, so much? And Rabbi Akiva answered them, Kol yomai ayisi mitzar. All my life I was pained by this verse. Which verse? It says, you should love Hashem b'chol levavcha, with all your heart, u'b'chol nafshecha, with all your soul. And the sages say, what does it mean with all your soul? Even if your soul is being taken away from you, even if your life is being taken away from you, you should be willing to give your life up to Hashem. All my life I was yearning to die in the sanctification for God's name. All my life I wanted this. And now when it's finally happening, I shouldn't celebrate? I shouldn't be excited? Of course. Because Rabbi Akiva, all his life, he wanted to melt, to dissolve into truth, to break away from this distortion, from the illusion that the created world presents, as if there's something other than Hashem. Because Rabbi Akiva is the personification of the Baal Tshuva. He's the Baal Tshuva. Now we'll understand the difference of the response. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael, if the people said al hein hein, on yeah yeah, on no no, or they answered to everything, the positive and the negative commandments, to everything they said yes. There's two things to every mitzvah. Every mitzvah has double significance. One part in a mitzvah, and that is equal by all mitzvahs. All mitzvahs are the same in this. That every mitzvah is Hashem's will. It's Hashem's desire. It doesn't make a difference what the mitzvah is. It can be mitzvahs that are so drastically different. It can be a mitzvah, one mitzvah can be a mitzvah of kindness, being nice to someone. The other mitzvah can be a mitzvah that's extremely harsh and exercising discipline or something. It doesn't make a difference. The main point of the mitzvah, this is what Hashem wants. One mitzvah can be a very kind of spiritual mitzvah, the other one can be a very physical activity. This is what Hashem wants. Every mitzvah is the commandment of Hashem. Whether He's asking us to put on tzitzis, to light Shabbos candles, or He's asking us to experience Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Achad, and to be willing to give our lives up for Him, or He's asking us to do, not to move something on Shabbos, it's all the same. It's Hashem asking. It's His will. What's the difference? What it is? When we think for one moment that that an infinite God, who to him all of creation, all the cosmos and everything, is absolutely nothing, and he is bending down and talking to a mortal human being, to a tiny little creature, and saying to him, please, do so. Please don't do that. What difference does it make what it is that he's saying? Hashem is speaking. You have an opportunity now to bond, to listen, to say yes to him. Every mitzvah is a connection to Hashem. But then there is another aspect of the mitzvahs, where every mitzvah has its own flavor. Every mitzvah is designed to have its own particular quality, its own particular effect on us and on the world around us. Every mitzvah has to achieve a certain refinement, a certain purification. Every mitzvah has to cultivate certain feelings, develop certain, make us into a mensch. We can see the mitzvahs that are so different. You have a mitzvah like the mitzvah like honoring parents, kabbad esavich. That's a mitzvah that cultivates a sense of gratitude. We become a mensch. You feel gratitude to those who have done good for you. Then you can have gratitude to Hashem. You can have gratitude. Then there is the Pesach Seder. The Pesach Seder has tremendous educational value of giving over to our children and all the mitzvahs that we do. Shabbos gives us a break from the hustle and bustle and the craziness of our lives, and we're able to breathe and we're able to tap into the higher things in life. Putting on tefillin gives us the control, the ability to have mind over heart, to exercise control over the mind. Moyach shalat al aleiv. That's the spiritual quality of that mitzvah. So every mitzvah has its quality, that which it needs to do. So the sages say there's 248 positive commandments corresponding to the 248 limbs of the human being. Every mitzvah purifies, elevates, sublimates a different one of our limbs. We don't necessarily know how every mitzvah relates to another limb, but every mitzvah is connected to another limb. There's 365 prohibited mitzvahs, Loisa says, connected to the 365 arteries or blood vessels within a person. Each mitzvah relating, connecting, purifying us, keeping our blood clean. That's in detail, but if we're dealing with more in general, mitzvahs are divided into two categories. There is, when Hashem is telling us, there are good things in this world that I want you to cultivate, I want you to get involved with, I want you to draw into yourselves, good things, and then there is the bad, and I want you to reject it. I want you to refuse it. I don't want you to get contaminated, I don't want you to get violated, I don't want you to get the schmutz, this filth, to harm you, to defile you. And that's what the prohibited mitzvahs is. Eat something non-kosher, and you're allowing the klippa, the unholiness, to defile your soul. Engage in a non-kosher relationship. You're taking in, you're absorbing the schmutz, the impurity into your soul. Steer clear, remain clean. That's what the mitzvahs are. Two kinds of mitzvahs. The yes and the no, the positive and the negative. This is about keeping the negative away. Shem says, I created a world. There is both. There is good and there is bad. U'bachar to b'chayim, choose life. Push away the death. Push away that's bad. That's the second aspect, where every mitzvah has its own unique, particular quality. So then it depends like this. Rabbi Akiva, whose entire approach to mitzvahs is an opportunity to connect to Hashem. Rabbi Akiva, who's not interested in being a perfect creation. Rabbi Akiva just wants to run away from everything. He just wants to cleave, connect, bond, merge, be embraced by Hashem. Rabbi Akiva says, who cares what the mitzvah is? This, every mitzvah is positive. Every mitzvah is, yeah, every mitzvah is Hashem saying, I am Hashem. I have a way I connect with you. It doesn't make a difference what it is. It's a mitzvah. So we're excited to do it. So into every mitzvah, he said, yes. Hein, the positive, yeah. Doesn't even notice the differences in the mitzvah, because it's not about the mitzvah. It's about the commander, not the commandment. So everything is yes. Yes to you, Hashem. Rabbi Yishmael, the story. No, there's a purpose in mitzvahs. This world needs to be cleansed, purified. Every nuance of the creation needs to be put into its place in order for it to enjoy a complete relationship and the unity with Hashem in each one in its particular way. So here you can hear the differences. You see, there is good, there is bad. Al-Hain, when Hashem said, this is a good thing, you said, oh wow, this is really good. This is so beautiful. This is so nice. Wow, yeah, hey, yeah, we're going to do that. And then when Hashem said, oh, that's disgusting. That's really yuck. And they said, oh yeah, that's bad. That's despicable. That's abhorrent. They said, lav, no. They sensed the particular aspects of the creation as it relates to the mitzvahs. And accepted the mitzvahs as the mitzvahs more relating to the creation. Because that's the purpose of the tzaddik. That's the purpose of elevating, purifying the world in all of its detail, in all of its little things. So we see how Rabbi Akiva, who royin asan nishma, v'shoyin asan nira, who transcends, who's living in that godly state, says, al hein hein. And Rabbi Yishmael, who sees the sights and hears the sounds, which means he's maintaining an earthy consciousness in the Torah. He sees the details and the difference of the mitzvahs. And he says, hein, hein, lav, lav, the yeah, and the no, each one separately. And now we'll understand something else. It's interesting, when Rabbi Akiva argues with Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva said on the yeah, yeah, and on the no, he also says yeah. So Rabbi Akiva is not disputing the first half. He's only disputing the second half. Again, what did Rabbi Shmuel say? Rabbi Shmuel spoke first. Rabbi Shmuel said, on the yeah, on all the positive things, they said yeah. And on the nays, on the no's, they said no. Rabbi Akiva comes to argue. Which one is he arguing on? He's only arguing the second part, because he agrees that on the yeah, they said yeah. He's only arguing on the second half. So Rabbi Akiva should have said no. They said, alav, lav. Alav, him. On the no, they also said yeah. Why does Rabbi Akiva repeat? And say, he repeats even the first half. He says, they said, al hein, hein, va'alav hein. On the yeah, they said yeah. Why is he saying the yeah? Because the yeah that they, according to Rabbi Akiva, is a different yeah than the Rabbi Yishmael. According to Rabbi Yishmael, when they're saying yeah, they're saying yeah, they're saying yeah, that's a great mitzvah. That's so beautiful. That's so God. That has so much positive. It's so much light to it. Such a good thing. We should do it. This is bad. We shouldn't do it. Rabbi Akiva is saying, no, when they're saying, yeah, it's not that the mitzvah is so nice and the mitzvah is so good. It's not about the mitzvah. It's yeah to Hashem. The yeah is a different yeah. It's yeah to you. It's your mitzvah I'm excited to do because you are asking me to do it. To take it just one step deeper, just a few moments to complete this. When Rabbi Akiva is saying that they said on everything, yeah, it's more than just, it doesn't make a difference what the mitzvah is, everything is yeah. Rabbi Akiva is saying more than just yeah. Rabbi Akiva is saying everything is positive. Everything is positive. When you're telling me there is a mitzvah that's full of light, it's positive. And when you're telling me to abstain from doing something bad, I don't see the bad, I don't see the ugly, I see only the good. I see an opportunity to serve Hashem by rejecting that thing, by saying no. See, there's two ways you can deal with the bad in your life. One way to deal with the bad in the life is seeing it as bad, ugly, terrible, and this is so terrible, this is so bad, I gotta just run away from it. This is yuck, bad. Another way of seeing everything bad is, how can there be anything bad in God's world? If it's Hashem's world and He is the source of everything, if the world doesn't even exist, and the only reason it exists is because the Torah gives it existence, so then everything can only exist in as much as it serves the Torah's will. So when Hashem created, let's say for example, when Hashem created wool, the entire content, it's not like there is a world, and there is all kinds of stuff in the world. There are good things and bad things. There is wool, for instance, and Hashem says, oh, there is wool tonight, you know what, I have a good idea. Take the wool and make tzitzis out of it. Oh, there is a pig in the world, that's no good. That's bad. Keep away from the pig. That's a bad thing. That's if we look at the creation as a substantial existence. It's something. But if you come from Rabbi Akiva's world, there is no creation. There is one thing, there is God. There is Hashem. Einoid Movade, there's none but Him. Now, there needs to be a world because there needs to be mitzvahs. So Hashem says like this, I want tzitzis. So I created a world where there are sheep that will grow wool, and now that you have wool, you make tzitzis from it. I want that you should not eat pig. That's what I want. So He created a world where there is a pig for us not to eat. So the whole pig that's there is only so that we can say, no, we won't eat it. So it's also good, because it's another way to serve Hashem. If there is something as horrible as an avodah zara, as an idol. Its entire existence, its pnimius, its essence is also Hashem. It's up at giving us an opportunity to reject something that Hashem doesn't want. And that's its content, that's what it is. So going back just for one moment, the story, when they were skinning Rabbi Akiva and pulling and torturing him to death, and the student said to him, Rabbi Akiva, what's with you? Atkan to here, meaning simply you're learning the story. What's the simple meaning of the story? Why was Rabbi Akiva saying Shema? Simply it was because they happened to take him out when it was time to read the Shema. He has a mitzvah to do. Every morning you're supposed to say Shema. In the evening, Rabbi Akiva had an obligation to say the Shema. So Rabbi Akiva was now saying Shema, creation. So his students were saying, Rabbi Akiva, I know you're so devoted to Yiddishkeit, you're so devoted to Hashem, but under such circumstances, you're being tortured to death with unspeakable pain, and you're just thinking about the mitzvah. But didn't the students know who Rabbi Akiva was? That is, commitment to Hashem and his loyalty was so strong and so powerful that yes, even under such circumstances, he will still do the mitzvah and serve Hashem. This wasn't the question and this wasn't the answer. What they were saying to Rabbi Akiva is as follows. You are now reading the Shema. You are now saying Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. You're proclaiming the unity of God, that there's nothing in this world but Hashem. That means this is what you're feeling right now. Hold it. Look around. What's happening around you? There are these barbaric, despicable, horrific human beings who are taking the greatest Torah giant and murdering him for no other crime but for serving Hashem. That is a complete refutation that contradicts the unity of Hashem. You're saying there's no one. You're saying Hashem Echad. This is not Hashem Echad. This is a conflict. There's something other than Hashem. Look, how's it possible? And Rabbi Akiva said, no. Rabbi Akiva said, all my life I wanted to die al Kiddush Hashem, meaning my entire life I'm living in this, with this quest to free myself from earthly consciousness. I'm living in this transcendental state that Hashem is the only reality. That Hashem is the only thing. If there is darkness, if there is evil in this world, the evil doesn't have any existence. Its entire existence is to serve Hashem too. To bring out something godly. Yes, Rabbi Akiva says, in those very combs that they're combing my skin, I see Hashem Echad. I see Hashem's unity. How do I see Hashem's unity? Because this killing is just there to enable a Jew to do a mitzvah of give his life up al Kiddush Hashem, to serve Hashem. That's the content of this whole thing. There is nothing other to it but the mitzvah. So this too isn't darkness, it's light. Rabbi Akiva saw in everything light, even in what was most dark. Why? Because if you're living in that higher consciousness, then the world only begins because the Torah wants it to exist. So there cannot be ever a darkness in this world that is truly a conflict, truly an obstacle, true darkness. Everything, if you dig deeper, is really, that too is an expression of the divine unity. Which one is true, Rabbi Akiva's way, Rabbi Yishmael's way? Both of them are true. We are supposed to serve Hashem both ways. And we were given the empowerment in Torah to serve Hashem both ways. Sometimes to be more human and to do the mitzvahs and to think about every mitzvah, figure out which one and how it impacts us. Sometimes we rise to a place where we're just committed to the divine will. And we're given the opportunity to see past all the darkness and see in everything the godliness that's in it. Until we will see all of us see the revelation of Mashiach. We will get to the second time when Hashem will give us it, will reveal Himself again, the Ashmienu, Racham of Shenis, Le'enei Kol Chai Leimer. Hashem is going to reveal to us and speak to us again with the coming of Mashiach. B'mehira b'yameinu. Oh, no, you